You're watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. When we talk about healthcare management in the country, we talk about the pandemic most of the time lately. And while this is important for us to have this conversation, it's also important for us to talk about other items within the healthcare systems, anywhere from taking care of cancer patients, all the way to the ongoing treatments and care for patients suffering from non-communicable diseases. And because of this, it's important for us to see where we can take this kind of methods of care and patient compliance to treatment the way forward. I have the pleasure to join us on this show, Rochelle Jayasundra, the Senior Director, Global Consulting at Axios International. Axios International last year signed an MOU with the National Cancer Society in Malaysia, or NCSM, to move ahead on how they can deliver patient assistant procedures to ensure patient compliance for oncology treatment. That's just one of the many steps that they're doing in this country. They've been around for quite a while, over 20 years actually, in a lot of places in the world, from Latin America to Europe to the MENA region. But of course, in Malaysia, they're still trying to pave their way through here. So it's because of this we want to understand a little bit more about the company and what they can do and bring to the table when it comes to patient healthcare. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us, Rochelle. Let's talk a little bit more about Axios International.
Absolutely, and thanks again, Ibrahim, for having me. So Axios is a global healthcare market access firm that is really focused on increasing access to treatment. And this has really been our key work for the past 25 years. So how do we make access to treatment a reality across emerging markets, across low and middle income countries? And we have actually been working for quite some time also in Malaysia. We first started in Malaysia back in 2008, where we had set up some special projects to help patients that had stomach cancer and renal cell carcinoma. Since then, we then came back 2017, I would say for a longer chapter and with more innovative cost sharing solutions, always focused on access. And to date, we have more than 15 programs nationwide. We've reached more than 1,000 patients, and we work not just in oncology, we've really spread across to multiple therapeutic areas.
I'm sure that there's a lot of other works that you intend to do here in this country, but at the same time, we try to understand how things have stalled because of the pandemic. How do you move forward with the business when the pandemic is raging globally?
This is a very interesting question, and one that, you know, we deal with on a daily basis, I would say, given the changes of the pandemic and obviously the impact of local restrictions, such as, for example, the MCO. So what we've seen is, of course, our first priority were really our teams. We had to make sure that our teams on the ground were safe and able to carry on our access initiatives in a safe manner and allowing also patients to get to their treatment. One of the biggest challenges I would say that we've faced was trying to help patients understand that despite the pandemic, there were safe and controlled mechanisms to reach their hospital or clinic to continue to treat their other diseases, right? So there was a huge psychological support that had to come to play. On top of that, the other challenge that we've seen is also improving the connectivity between the physicians, the patients, so beyond just what happens in the hospital. And what we did as a business in Malaysia last year, actually, we launched our digital solutions, what we call Axios Plus, which in essence is a digital healthcare ecosystem that allows the different stakeholders to be connected. So it facilitates the interaction, but doesn't replace the human touch. So we think this has been quite important for us to continue our business in Malaysia.
And this is the part where I want to benchmark Malaysia's performance with that of the rest of the world. How do you think we are faring right now versus what's happening around the world? I mean, you're in Dubai, in the UAE. I'm sure things have calmed down there. Would you like to share with us some of the progress that some countries are going through? What worked for them? What is not working for us?
Yes, sure, absolutely. I mean, I think in general, Malaysia has been doing a great job. And I would say when it comes to healthcare, it ranks quite high within the whole Southeastern Asia region, I would say. So definitely it has put healthcare as a priority and is trying to address the challenges that it faces. Of course, each country has different, I would say, priorities, different strategies. You mentioned briefly the UAE. That there is a very strong vaccination campaign that is ongoing here. It's largely available and the population has access to it. But you know, when we talk about vaccines, and this is true across multiple countries, it's not just about having access to it, but it's also the availability. I can tell you a little bit, I'm from Italy, and even a country as developed as Italy has had its significant challenges due to COVID.
Okay, let's talk about some of the programs that Exeos is rolling out. These include the patient assistance programs or PAPs. It allows for eligible patients across this country to overcome affordability barriers, and you're trying to see if you can assess these patients' ability to complete their treatment even if they can't afford to pay in full. And this is, of course, allows for greater access of patients to get medical care. But at the same time, I just want to see how this is sustainable, at the same time, how this could be profitable for your for-profit company.
Thanks, Ibrahim. Great question. So maybe just to give you a little bit of context of how we design these patient support or patient assistance programs in general. So our focus is always on the patient. We put the patient at the center of the design, try to map out all of the patient journey and the challenges, and then come up with a solution. So often, and this is the case also in Malaysia, when we talk about NCDs and the need for more innovative medication, this comes at a cost that one alone cannot bear, right? So what we try to do is we've developed a proprietary tool which assesses each patient's ability to pay. It takes into account three main factors. We look at the income, the standard of living, and the assets. So the tool is called the Patient Financial Eligibility Tool. And we're able then to come back to the patient and say, based on our assessment, you would be able to contribute X towards your treatment, and the remaining part would be supported by the program or via other pockets of funding to ensure that, first of all, the patient gets access to treatment, but second and most important, the patient can stay on treatment and maximize their outcome. And this second point is one that we should not take so lightly, because often what you see, and we've seen this in Malaysia, where patients might be enrolled into your typical buy X, get Y scheme. And what happens is that at some point the patient will run out of money. They haven't been able to receive the full course of treatment and therefore have limited medical outcomes. So really for us, the focus of our programs is affordability-based, individualized, and ensure that they can stay on treatment.
A lot of Malaysian patients, particularly oncology patients, are normally covered under the national insurance system, and they get their treatments from public hospitals. And the role of private hospitals is very crucial in this country. But at the same time, public hospitals are indeed affording such great care for majority of Malaysians. But the issue here is this: elective cases are now put on hold, and cases involving NCDs, oncology patients, are now taking a back seat. No matter how important the care for these kind of patients is being seen, the management of COVID is ultimately much more important. So you see, there's a priority between public and private, and within the public sphere, there's also the prioritization between NCD oncology versus pandemic or emergency cases. It's so difficult to talk about the national healthcare policy systems, but at the same time, it's important for us to talk about this. I don't know how familiar you are with the Malaysian healthcare system, but perhaps you could shed some light into how we can get ourselves untangled from this horrible mess that we've found ourselves in.
I think the starting point is definitely, and I go back to what I said earlier, the fact to acknowledge the fact that the Malaysian healthcare system, with its duality, is still trying to address as much of the population as possible, right? But the reality, and we see this across other markets, is that it cannot alone tackle this issue, especially now where, as you correctly said, COVID and the pandemic and addressing the immediate needs of the pandemic is taking a priority to some extent. So that's where, from what we've seen, having multiple parties, both public and private coming together. So really this multi-stakeholder collaboration is what would be the key, I would say, to unlocking the system. And that's a little bit what we are trying to do within Malaysia.
Okay, let's talk about some investments that you're piling in into this country. How much are we talking about? Is it going to be tiered, or are you guys suspending business for the time being until we wrestle with this COVID-19 management?
So Axis is definitely here to stay in Malaysia, I would say, and we're not intending to go anywhere because access is a reality, a challenge that patients face in Malaysia. And wherever there is an access challenge, Axios as an organization will be present to try and support the patients. So we intend to stay in Malaysia for long. In terms of investments and what we hope to bring to the market is definitely key learnings from other countries that we operate in. We're quite happy to say that digital was first launched in Malaysia, actually. So as Axis and organization, we're present in multiple countries, but we first launched in Malaysia because we found the environment ready, despite the pandemic, to move this forward. So what we hope to bring is continued focus on affordability, but also starting to look more holistically at the patients, because affordability is just the initial layer. Understanding what goes on within the context of a patient's world and helping them navigate the system, their personal challenges, is also something very important. So we're looking at this closely. And again, as I mentioned, bringing forward digital. Now, digital from our perspective is an enabler, it's a facilitator. It does not replace my team on the ground because we can really see the needs, and even more so now, for the human connection between our teams and the patients. So for us, having digital will allow us to have more standardized processes, but it will also allow us to then look at the trends and the insights of these programs, so that we can go back and present meaningful results as to the impact that these programs are having on patients' lives.
Okay, we'll go for one short break before we continue our conversation with Axios International. Thanks for staying on. I have with me Rochelle Jayasundara, the Director of Global Consulting at Axios International. We're talking about the company as well as the company's foray into Malaysia. Rochelle, before we went to the break just now, you were talking about digital. Could you elaborate a little bit more about what you mean by that? And does this include AI? Does this include Industrial 4.0 revolution in terms of how healthcare is going to be revolutionized through your products and services?
Thanks, Ibrahim. So Axios developed a few years ago an in-house solution called Axios Plus. What we aim to do was to have one unique ecosystem that would connect all of the stakeholders that are relevant to our programs to overcome the access challenges. And I would say the key differentiator about this digital environment that we created is the fact that it's designed along the patient journey, and it's not tied perhaps to a box or to a physician appointment. It's really taking it from the patient's perspective and from their journey perspective. So we have multiple components linked to it. We have a patient app that the patient can log into, understand where they are towards their treatment journey. In some cases, they can receive educational materials, reach out for support, and so forth. We have an app for the physicians. This allows the physicians to be able to also track their patients. And this is very important. They can track their patients at their own convenience, because what we see is that the physicians are very busy overall, right? So we don't want to burden them with additional work. Rather, we give them the choice of interacting with the app and having access to information. Likewise, a huge part of our programs includes also supporting patients with product, either sponsored by the program or that the patient would pay or contribute towards. And product control within this context from a quality perspective is also very important. So we have also developed a pharmacy app which helps reduce any administrative burden at a hospital, at a clinic level, again, trying to build efficiency. All of these various components are linked to the Axios patient management system, which is in essence the heart, so that everybody has access within data privacy, I would say, limits to the correct information.
I think what you are also touching is a lot on the medical legal aspect of things. How do you ensure that patients' data is secured, and how does this comply with all the jurisdictions that you guys operate in?
So Axios is actually headquartered in Ireland, so in Europe, which means that we are by default GDPR compliant throughout all of our processes. And on top of this, what we have done, so all of our SOPs, all of our processes, our trainings, our designs are GDPR compliant. And where there are local data privacy acts, as is the case in Malaysia, we take this into account to make sure that the data of the patients, the physicians, any data subject that we deal with is always protected. And the patient or the data subject transparently knows who to contact should they have an issue.
Okay, and does this change how you would roll out the product in Malaysia? Because I would assume that Malaysian laws would have some nuances into how such data is going to be shared with the patient versus with the doctors and perhaps even with some insurance companies that would require such data to be furnished to them.
Absolutely. So one of the key things that we do through our programs, we don't, I would say, access or collect data for the sake of having data. Really, the only reason why we can process the data is for the purpose of the program, which is to facilitate access to treatment. So any information that is given to us is not then shared with no other external party. And of course, we make sure all consents and legal documentation is in place with the data subjects involved.
So back to my earlier question about using this for, I don't know, predictive medicine, ability for us to use forecasting, other than what you have shared, which is, you know, full on knowledge for the patient, including information or material, material information that would be good for the patient to know. Do we use these kind of data to use it for prediction, for forecasting, for ability for us to learn more about what we could go through in the years to come? How do we make this a little bit more AI enabled?
So at the moment, I would say this is not on the agenda because really our focus is to solve the first problem related to access. But what we will be doing definitely as we capture these insights, we can already see, to give you a very small example, we can see that if we interact with the patient via phone compared to via email or some sort of a push notification, this has a direct impact on the patient staying on treatment. So these are the types of behaviors that we can now see and then adapt within the context of our operations to support the patient further.
Okay. It's also important for us to discuss culture. I don't know what the rate is when it comes to patients' compliance to treatment here in Malaysia. I don't know where to begin to gather such data, but how do we ensure that that whole notion of continuously seeking out treatment is being married, I suppose, or coupled with the context of how the culture is in Malaysia? It's very much a public health idea. It's not just about the technology. You're right when you started off with this answer, saying that you know, it's an enabler, but at the same time, it's important for us to comply, keep on treatment, the relationship between the healthcare provider versus the patient. You know, can it change behavior within cultures, you think, by having such technology?
Absolutely, and I think culture has a huge impact on the uptake of any digital solution, first of all, but moreover on the compliance to treatment. This is why I would say in most of our programs, we have embedded a compliance mechanism, which is that we follow up with each patient on a per patient per cycle basis. Further to that, we've actually built a new tool called the Patient Needs Assessment Tool, which supports adherence to NCDs or to diseases in general, staying on treatment, I would say. And the way that this tool, the PNAT, works is that it takes into account the five dimensions of adherence as recommended by WHO. And we try and map out the patient against these dimensions. So for example, the dimensions could be are socioeconomic, therapy related, patient related, healthcare system related, or condition related. If we take you and I as an example, if we were the patients, Perhaps in your context, you need more therapy-related support, while I might need more healthcare system-related support. So what this tool allows us to do is map Ibrahim, map Rochelle, based on the intervention that is most likely to influence our ability to stay on treatment, or rather to avoid us, I would say, from dropping out.
Mapping out is done automatically or with a human being in between?
With human being, and there's an algorithm that calculates it. So it's the two that go hand in hand. I would say the automation is rather to make the time aspect perspective more efficacious. The human being aspect is needed to capture those cultural nuances you were referring to earlier. Because with the interaction, you can probe and you can understand what are the dimensions that impact this patient the most.
Does this require a physician intervention or just a particular technician or a person that is familiar with the item?
Healthcare educated staff, Axios trained, that are familiar with the tool and its context. And then this would give out a plan of, I would say, interaction with that patient.
So what does this mean to the future of medicine? Do you believe that the internal medicine practitioners, oncologists, would require some form of understanding of how these technologies work in pursuit of them giving the best care for their patients?
I think in terms of the future, and this is very important because the physician's role will always continue to be key. I think similar to what digital does for Axios, where it helps us, it enables interaction, I think you will never be able to replace a physician, despite all the telehealth or telemonitoring initiatives you have seen over the last 2 years. What we are trying to do is rather to help the patient once they leave the physician office. So what happens to these patients once they're outside of the hospital setting today is a gap. So what we hope to do is to build a bridge or a continuum of care to support the entire ecosystem.
What about invasive procedures, surgical procedures? How does this fit into your, solution that you're rolling out in various countries?
So at the moment, we are not involved with any invasive procedures. We are purely focused, I would say, on the treatment aspects. We do support some of the patients with access to diagnosis, but not with an actual intervention.
Okay, no plans, I suppose, for now.
Not for the time being.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the markets that you guys operate in. Other than Malaysia, where do you guys operate in right now?
So we're present in Latin America. We're present in Europe, Sub-Saharan Africa, Middle East, North Africa largely, and also in Asia. We've been across all of these markets, I would say, for various periods of time. As an organization, I mentioned earlier, we've been around for 25 years. In Asia, we've been there since 2008. In the Middle East, it's actually our 10th year anniversary. So we're very happy to be celebrating that and the innovation that we've brought. Africa, we've been there since the start, so 25 years. And when it comes to Europe and Latam, I would say these are the newer regions for Axios.
And because of the various starting points that you have in all these regions, do you feel that a particular region or particular country would have a leg up in terms of how they manage their medicine telehealthcare ahead of other countries? Do you feel that there is a need for us to equalize all these starting points in order for us to make it work for everyone, the way we do about rolling out vaccines, for instance, for the COVID-19, where everybody tends to start at the same time? Where do we stand in terms of telemedicine, telehealthcare for all?
I think, what worked well, and it's interesting, you mentioned the vaccine. So when the pandemic happened, there was a need to be more flexible, I would say, within such a regulated environment, which is that of healthcare. So if I translate that to the type of solutions that Axios does and the access challenges that we see, I think what we need in order to provide that healthcare for all is a little bit more collaboration between private and public sector, find a way to really bring all of the stakeholders to one table and say, what is it that we need to do that we can do today to make sure that access becomes a reality? Because often what we've seen somehow hinder or be a barrier to access could be a regulation that was pertinent at the time, but may have room for more support. And I'd like to highlight, I would say, and the UAE is a very good example of how they have been open to the idea of access, helping shape policies, bringing multiple companies together to serve as many patients as possible. And we're doing something similar in Malaysia, I would say, and I'm very excited about it.
So anything you want to launch or announce before we end this interview?
Oh, no, I think we will let our work speak for itself, hopefully.
All right. Final thoughts on, because I opened the show and I prefaced the show about how this is, we have to think about this in economic terms as well. This is, of course, a business show, and I want to understand a little bit better about what you think is the way out through the pandemic. And the reason to this is because, you know, when I watch the football games on Euro 2020, it frustrates me because people are entering back to the stadiums, they're enjoying life, and Malaysia is under lockdown. And you know, to think that we were ahead on management of COVID-19 back in March or April last year, it frustrates me that a country can just go backwards in terms of how we manage the pandemic. And then, of course, you layer it with the fact that now people are talking about this being a possible endemic, and vaccine efficacy might not be as high as we initially thought it would be. And of course, the Delta variant now raging across the world. You know, all these issues, what would be some of the predictions that you have when it comes to countries like us, like Malaysia, managing this COVID issue? And perhaps, how do you see the world move ahead in the years to come on the backdrop of this pandemic moving into an endemic?
So it's a very interesting and obviously challenging question. I would say when you look at Southeast Asia overall, despite the fact that, yes, in some markets you have more control or more restrictions. I mean, you were saying people are going to watch the football match, and in some countries you're completely locked down. Despite this, when you look at the prediction from an economic perspective, there's still growth for Southeast Asia. So that will be interesting to see. In terms of key lessons that we'll be taking away, I think the whole concept of this new way of working and maximizing efficiency within the workforce will have an impact ultimately from financial terms perspective. And I think there will be a point, some countries later than others, to realize that we might need to ease the restrictions to get the economy flowing again, because we can't keep our borders shut forever, I think. And we will see the impact gradually. We will learn to live with the pandemic as we have with other disease outbreaks in the past, I would say.
Yeah, thanks again. That was Rochelle Jayasundra, the Director of Global Consulting at Axios International. That was a very pleasant conversation, Rochelle. Pleasure meeting you, I suppose.
Nice to meet you, and hopefully we'll meet in person.
Hopefully. It's one of those many people that I put in my check little box and I said, I want to meet this person, but you know, I'm a realist, so I don't know when that will happen. But until then, we have to end this interview right now. But that was my conversation with Rochelle Jayasundra, Director of Global Consulting at Access International. If you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astro1.com. Look for Notepad over there. You can look for Axios as well, AXIOS, on our website. Until then, thanks very much for watching, and goodbye.